You're listening to the Isaka Podcast. On today's 50th anniversary episode of the Isaka Podcast, we're visiting with Jedediah Yu, chairman with Delphix. We'll be discussing some of the most disruptive technologies of the past 50 years and looking to the future of disruptive tech. Jed, thank you for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me on the podcast.
If you can start out by pinpointing what you consider to be the highest impact technological innovation over your lifetime and why.
I think if you look at my lifetime, you really have to look at computers and then the internet. And if you kind of combine the two, I kind of focus on the internet as the explosion point for what has really changed the world today. If you go all the way back into human history, humans used to connect in person. We had physical interactions, and then you had technologies like telegraphs and the phones. But once you have computers and the internet, the creativity that can be applied to the modes of communication really unleashed all of these incredible different kinds of applications that change the nature of how we communicate and the types and methods of communication. And so I think that really changed the entire human race. It changed us as a race in how we communicate with each other. And so I would definitely say the biggest impact is computers and the internet.
How about a technological advancement that might not be as high profile and might even be taken for granted by people, but in your view, has made a profound difference in people's quality of life?
For this question, it really depends on how far back in time you want to go. If you look at kind of the broad sweep of human history, there are a lot of these technologies that I think we take for granted today. Eyeglasses, for instance, are a technology that allowed a portion of the population to really be effective for a much longer period of time. A lot of the people who are in that specific segment of the population are highly intelligent. So you have this retention of a lot of the really intelligent parts of the species who were able to contribute at full capacity to the betterment of the human race. Even something like birth control pills, which unlocks the ability for, you know, half the population to control the time in which they might have a child and be and not be able to, you know, function at work. That really unlocks a huge portion of the population for productivity. You know, even something like the clock, it's very easy to take for granted. It's an incredible technology because it allows you to coordinate activity all at the same time for large numbers of human beings. So I think there are quite a number of these technologies that we take for granted today, and a lot of them have made fundamental changes to humans and society.
The internet and social media have allowed us to be more globally connected than ever before. Generally speaking, do you think we're putting the potential that comes along with that to good use?
Yeah, it's interesting. When you look at companies like Facebook and their mission is to connect people, there's so many unintended consequences that come from the way that these applications have changed our lives. You certainly have the filter bubbles, and you have all the fake news, which have really driven more division into society as a whole. But all the time we spend connecting to each other or with each other via applications and computers or mobile, all that takes away from time when we could have true human physical face-to-face connections. And so in some ways, it really undermines its own mission. So I think while these applications are, and these companies are incredible in the scale and their growth and the revenues that they can drive, in general, they've had incredible unintended consequences that are mostly detrimental to the human experience.
A few months back, you were part of the panel at ISACA's North America CAX conference on 50 years of disruptive technology. What were some of your main takeaways from that discussion?
It was a great discussion. It was really interesting to step back and look at it decade by decade. You can really see the forest for the trees. And I think one of the things that struck me is how easily we confuse hype and reality. I think one of the big talking points was the predictions around Y2K and how they really ended up being a complete fabrication. But if you look at some of the technologies that we talk a lot about today, something like blockchain, people have been talking about it for so many years as this incredible transformative technology. And yet really there's only one use case where it's really been applied and has had any material impact on the world, and that's the cryptocurrency world. So I think that's one of these kind of hype versus reality kind of conditions.
Where do you think we're at with harnessing AI? Are you more encouraged or discouraged with the direction that we're heading?
I think we're in the very early innings. And as an entrepreneur and as a startup founder, I'm very encouraged by AI and machine learning and all the open source frameworks that are at the disposal for technologists today. There's so much you can do with it to optimize different industries or different human interactions, or to change the way applications interact with users. And so I think there is an incredible amount of things you can do with the range of AI, machine learning, deep learning, natural language processing, all these different kinds of AI technologies. On the other hand, if you look at the same thing that happened with social media, there's an incredible opportunity for unintended consequences. And as machine learning drives more and more of human behavior, it will change human behavior. It'll create addiction to these kinds of applications that we've seen with a lot of the applications that are out there today. And then there's a feedback loop where that change in human behavior keeps getting fed back into the machine learning. And so there's the opportunity for a fundamental change in the human experience driven by how we interface with machine learning algorithms that are adapting to us on the fly. And I think that it's hard to see the long-term consequences of that.
And speaking of AI, there's been quite a bit of consternation about potentially malicious uses of AI. To what extent do you share those concerns?
AI, like any kind of technology, can be used for good or for evil. And I think there are a lot of ways that AI will be used for really bad use cases. And I think that's something that we just need to be aware of and mindful of as a society.
Are there any aspects of the strides that we've made with technology that you consider to be overreach? For example, a lot of people express concerns about all the screen time that kids have and how addictive that can be, and even for adults.
Yeah, there's certainly overreach. And I think the interesting thing is that overreach is going to get a huge boost from continuous applications of machine learning. And as machine learning and AI get more and more sophisticated, what will happen is these algorithms, these models that are developed by software automatically will drive more and more addictive human behavior. And that's the kind of overreach that I think we really need to be careful of.
So is the genie out of the bottle, or are there some things we can do as a society and even as individuals and families to course correct?
Yeah, the genie is definitely out of the bottle. I think when you have these kind of technologies that are so readily available and you have a capitalist system that really creates this profit imperative, you're going to have companies that are just charging for growth and for increasing revenue and increasing users and increasing engagement through their applications and their technologies. So I think there's no end to that. But as you just mentioned, you know, there are things that we can do as individuals and as families. You can certainly limit or prescribe the amount of time you're willing to devote or allow your children to use applications and technology. I think we need to have a defense for like being humans, not being interfaces, not being these organisms that are constantly interfacing with technology and mobile or other compute devices and applications.
Are there any specific industry verticals that you believe are showing leadership in how to effectively and securely manage some of these disruptive technologies?
I think the traditional industries are all slowly applying these technologies. They're slowly and timidly applying these technologies. And so the leaders are really the high-tech companies of the world. It's really what's happening in Silicon Valley and the new kind of startups that are growing all over the world today.
What's your sense of where we're at in terms of technology professionals in the Isaka community and beyond, in terms of the need to develop a comfort level with some of the drivers of future innovation that we've been talking about?
Yeah, it's a fast-moving world, but one of the great things about a lot of these new technologies is they're so readily available on the internet for anybody to use and to experiment with today. And there are so many free courses for coding or for data science or for data analytics. And so it's pretty easy to get a brief on all the different AI technologies that are available, how they work, and how to deploy them in different kinds of use cases. So I definitely encourage technologists to go deep and to try it themselves and see what they can learn in just a matter of a couple days or a couple weeks worth of effort.
In wrapping up, I won't ask you to look 50 years into the future, but what do you think will be some of the most disruptive advancements in technology over the next decade?
I think over the next decade, you have more of the same. I think we're still in the tail of mobile. I think the iPhone and smartphones are still the most disruptive, transformative engine over the last decade and will still be in the next decade. But I think there is something else that's occurring right now that is perhaps even more powerful, and it's not a single item. So when you said just what will be the most disruptive advancement, I think it's if you look at the cumulative effect of multiple different technologies, I think that will be the biggest effect. today, it's really not just one wave of disruption that's occurring. You know, you certainly have the long-term kind of effects of the internet right now, but you have mobile that's continuing its transformation of how we operate as a society and how different industries operate. But you also have the incredible fast-moving growth in open source technologies and all of these kind of open source frameworks for AI and machine learning and the like. You also have the cloud, and then you have these, you know, really big application platforms like the app stores that are available in Android and iOS. It's the combination of these different technologies, this layering of all of these transformative technologies that are permanently accelerating the pace of innovation and lowering hurdles for changing the world.
Well, obviously, there are things to be encouraged about and things to be concerned about, but all things considered, these are awfully exciting times to be in technology, right?
There's never been a better time to change the world. If you have a great technology idea, now is really the time. There are so many tools at your disposal, and a lot of the friction and a lot of the challenges that used to be in place if you wanted to scale an application or technology company have all been handled. They've all been taken away, or they've become services. You know, you used to have to scale these football field compute and server and storage farms, but today you can just buy the drink in Amazon or any other major cloud to scale your application. So a lot of the things that were much harder before are easier today. And so it's really easier and more readily available for anybody.
Jed, thank you so much for sharing your insights with the Isaka podcast audience. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me on the podcast.
That's our program for today. For more on Isaka's 50th anniversary, visit www.isaka50.org.